Good morning. It's 11 minutes before the hour. You're listening to KCAW Sitka on this Thursday, the 22nd day of December 2011. I'm Jeff Seifert for Raven News. An Air Station Sitka helicopter safely medevaced an injured man from Port Alexander to Sitka on Tuesday. The Coast Guard received a call around 12:30 in the afternoon that a 38-year-old man had suffered back injuries after falling from scaffolding. The crew of the Jayhawk arrived in Port Alexander shortly after 3 p.m. and transported the patient to Sitka emergency medical personnel. The man was receiving treatment at Sitka Community Hospital by 4 p.m. The Air Station Sitka flight surgeon recommended the medevac in lieu of commercial transportation due to the space needed for moving someone with a back injury. Guided anglers in southeast Alaska may be able to keep some bigger halibut next summer. At its meeting in Anchorage this month, the North Pacific Fishery Management Council recommended a change in the size limit that restricted charter businesses last season. Matt Lichtenstein reports.
Under the proposal, guided anglers in southeast would be allowed to keep one halibut a day up to 45 inches long, or they could keep one halibut that's 68 inches or bigger. The measure is called a reverse slot limit, and the North Pacific Council recommended it to replace the straight 37-inch maximum size limit that charter operators worked under last season. Heath Hilliard is executive director of the Southeast Alaska Guides Organization, or SEGO. He says the recommendation came out of the council's Charter Management Implementation Committee, which included five charter skippers from southeast.
You know, none of the options we were considering for 2012 would we ever describe as ideal, but we, you know, talking to operators, we felt like this reverse slot limit was the best option for the most number of people throughout the region.
Prior to last season, the Southeast Charter Fleet had been regularly exceeding its annual allocation of halibut, its guideline harvest level. In the past few years, federal fishery managers responded by cutting the client bag limit in half from two fish to one per day in the region, permanently limiting the number of operators who can fish halibut, and this past season, imposing the 37-inch maximum size restriction. There's also a broader set of regulations called a catch-sharing plan that's still in the works, but so far, the 37-inch limit appears to have had the most immediate impact, as the 2011 charter fleet's catch totaled 388,000 pounds in southeast. That was only half the GHL and well below half the previous year's catch. The average weight of a charter-caught halibut plummeted, and according to Hilliard, so did the sale of charter trips.
You know, what charter operators in southeast experienced was, you know, a dramatic downturn in their business because of you know, the loss of, you know, reasonable-sized fish, and particularly when you talk about Petersburg, which relies heavily on halibut during the month of July in particular, and Gustavus throughout the year, they really need, you know, their clients need the opportunity for a trophy-class fish.
Even if they don't catch a trophy fish, the newly recommended measures would allow a guided angler the chance to bring home a significantly bigger fish than they could this past season. According to North Pacific Fishery Management Council Executive Director Chris Oliver, the council saw the reverse slot limit as a way to meet the needs of both industry and management.
You know, we won't know for sure till we go through a season with it, but we think it has a very good chance of working for both sides. You know, keeping the charter fleet within their GHL allocation, but also giving them the opportunity to tell a client, yeah, if you catch a big trophy fish, you can keep it.
The charter restrictions are part of a much larger effort to address a decade-long decline in halibut abundance. There are lots of individual fish, but scientists say they are not growing nearly as big, so the overall biomass is way down. Just in southeast Alaska, the commercial fleet has seen its catch reduced by roughly 80% over the past 6 years. The council's reverse slot limit recommendation next goes to the Halibut Commission, which is expected to consider the proposal during its annual meeting in January. In Petersburg, I'm Matt Lichtenstein.
We have one clarification on this story. The decline in halibut abundance is a decline in the exploitable biomass, which is the amount of fish big enough to be harvested by the commercial fishing industry. Anyone who spends much time in Sitka knows that it's not really like other small towns. It's small but diverse. The community is remarkably united on some things but divided on others. Residents and visitors alike consider it a kind of paradise, but it's also got many of the same social problems that plague just about every place else. In early 2010, author and scholar Gary Holthaus attempted to identify Sitka's distinctiveness by interviewing people, over 90 in all. His work was sponsored by the Alaska Humanities Forum and was subsequently published in a paper called Up for Discussion, What Makes a Sustainable Community. Holthaus's paper caught the attention of Diana Saverin, a Maynard Mac Fellow at Yale University. Saverin visited Sitka this summer to meet some of the people in the study and to hear their stories firsthand. In part one of a five-part series of Sitka Profiles, Saverin goes backstage into the life of musician and teacher Hank Moore.
Two, one, two, ready, go.
That's Hank on the guitar. Around Sitka Fine Arts Camp, he's a rock star, a legend.
So when I walk in one of these classrooms with 16 kids, they start smiling before I open my mouth. Half of them know me before I get to know them. Hey, Hank, who are you?
His local stardom goes beyond middle schoolers. Everywhere he walks, people stop him to talk, catch up, check in. It would seem like he's been here forever, but he hasn't. It took him a while to find Sitka.
I can say when I was in the fourth grade, that's right, when they integrated schools in North Carolina, I had this teacher named Miss Butler. And she would start the class by saying, this week we're going to go to Argentina. And we would read about Argentina. And one day I went to school, and she said, this week we're going to go to Alaska. And it snows all the time. And I said, you know, one day I want to go to Alaska. I don't know when, but I would really like to go to where it snows all the time, because I was crazy about snow when I was little.
While dreaming about Alaska between the ages of 9 and 42, he lived in North Carolina, South Carolina, Memphis, Chicago, was in the Navy, an engineering major, a truck driver. He never really stayed in one place. But none of these places or jobs brought Hank what he needed in the way Sitka did, at the time he needed it most.
Just after my wife died, after she died, I just wanted to get away from down there. It brought me home. Yep, home and community, things that are important for me. I think this town is what home should be like.
I walk this lonely road, it's the one that I have ever known. Don't know where it goes, but it's only me and I walk alone.
Let's do it again. Is that too low? Would you like to change keys?
Hank experienced a personal crisis after the loss of his wife 13 years ago. It was a painful period in his life. In many ways, he hit bottom. Sitka, he told me, gave him a second chance. When he finally made his way to Alaska, his four kids didn't follow. And to this day, won't.
Well, to be honest, they won't talk to me.
Why not?
Because I'm not a Christian. First they tried to save me. They spent a lot of energy doing that. When that work didn't work, it just felt like they couldn't talk to me.
This lack of contact with his family continues to leave a void, he said. But in Sitka, he finds something every day that helps fill it. One of his many jobs, including taxi driving, working on a gravel truck, and fishing, contributes. Teaching guitar to kids.
I got involved with a lot of other families. I always felt like by connecting with other people's children, I'm always connected with my own. I think you could say it filled the void. It means a lot to me when a parent trusts me with their kids the way they do around here. It do. I think that's what kept me here too. Well, it gives me purpose. I mean, one time my daughter called me. And I was teaching this kid guitar lesson. He was 9 years old. And I said, I can't talk right now because I'm doing a guitar lesson. I said, here's Ben Gordon. He's 9 years old. And I gave him the phone. He talked to my daughter. And when he gave the phone back, what I heard in her voice, no money or nothing could take the place. She was so proud of me teaching this 9-year-old kid guitar lesson. He said, Dad, I didn't know you could do stuff like that.
While nothing can completely fill such a void, the chance Sitka gave him has changed him and continues to do so.
Before I was the Lone Ranger, I wanted to be on everybody's good side. I wanted to make everything right. I wanted to be noticed. Person I am now, I'm like a sunflower out in the middle of the field, catching the rain, And even when it do rain, my yellow flowers still make it look like it's light outside. If somebody see the flower, it's fine. And if it don't, it's still okay. But that's who I am now.
In Sitka, I'm Diana Savrin.
Reporter Diana Savrin is a Maynard Mac Fellow at Yale University who visited Sitka this summer to meet people who contributed to a study on the community's distinctiveness. In part two of her series tomorrow, or today actually, this afternoon, she'll meet Sitka veterinarian and fisherman Burgess Bowder. The Coast Guard is enlisting its only functioning icebreaker to help with the delivery of fuel to Nome. The city on Alaska's western coastline is iced in and facing a winter fuel shortage because a massive storm prevented a fuel delivery by barge this fall. The plan is for an ice-classed Russian tanker to deliver 1.5 million gallons of petroleum products to Nome in early January. The Coast Guard says it will have the cutter Healy break ice along the nearly 300-mile route from the ice edge to Nome. The Seattle-based Healy's mission has been extended a month for this. Mayor Denise Michaels says the city appreciates the collaborative efforts being shown to deliver fuel that will sustain it through the winter. And a group in Anchorage is planning to converge on City Hall today to protest what members see as a war on Christmas. In the noon rally, protesters plan to speak out in defense of saying Merry Christmas instead of politically correct Happy Holidays, and they'll do it by singing Christmas carols. They'll also protest against the state's so-called English-only law by singing some of the carols in Latin. Some may take a prone position outside City Hall to defy the city's new ban on sitting on sidewalks. Mayor Dan Sullivan has been invited to the gathering. That's it for news for this hour. You're listening to KCAW Sitka. It's 1 minute past the hour. Good morning.